Good morning, darlings. I'm speaking to you from Chicago and from the middle of final season here at Northwestern. Do not ask me how I found time to do this, but for the next few weeks, by virtue of my thinking about these topics a lot, we are going to discuss more lifestyle-oriented topics as they relate to literature, the most obvious of which, due to the current pop culture climate, is, of course, minimalism. Hello and welcome back to Diddy and Hawthorne in the In-Between. I'm your host, Mackenzie Gentz, and you're listening to my podcast about the relevancy of literature in the 21st century. Now bookmark that book and let's begin. To start, I figure that we should garner together a working definition of minimalism, if possible, so as to operate on the same page when we start discussing the virtues of minimalist literature. I suppose actually that some background on yours truly will help with this, so let's begin on that. In 2016, which was my junior year of high school, I got a bed bug infestation just in my room at home, which was an event that flipped my life completely upside down. Up until then, I would say that I was a rather normal teenager. I wasn't an obsessive hoarder, but I had tons of clothing that I didn't wear, and it took a bit of tidying and hiding things to make my room look semi-presentable. In the middle of this epidemic, I ended up going away to boarding school for a few months in the summer, taking with me a single suitcase in the hope that by the time I got back, the issue would be somewhat resolved. When I was there, actually, my mom ended up sending me our first novel on the list today, Goodbye Things by Fumio Sasaki, but it wasn't until I got back from boarding school that I took everything, literally everything, which wasn't hard because it was all packed in boxes anyway, out of my room and I got rid of it. The most important part of that move, actually, as drastic as it sounds, was that I didn't replace anything after I got rid of it. From there, I moved to college in two suitcases and am pushing to do my entire summer this summer in a carry-on. We will see about that. But in any case, I am a rather serious minimalist myself today, which is why taking a look at minimalism in terms of its literature is really important to me. As far as an actual definition goes, I'm going to take the minimalist definition and say that it primarily has to do with severing attachments to material items, and beyond that, getting rid of physical things to focus on the things in your life that matter, whatever that might be for you. So much of our time on the day-to-day is consumed by things today, looking for things, cleaning things, checking things on social media, and minimalism for me is a way to free up my time so that I can get past the menial to seek the extraordinary in my life. I also think that minimalism takes on a different shade for every individual, a different tone, so perhaps the number of books that I have or the number of teas that you have is inherently not right for one or the other of us, but that's okay. We were made to be inherently different, so it's only right that my minimalism is not going to be the same as anyone else's. What matters mostly in this scenario is following through with the concept in order, as the minimalists again say, to live your most meaningful life, whatever that might be for you. All this being said, if minimalism is not for you, it's not for you, and that's 100% okay. No one else in my family is a minimalist, and my roommate is a non-minimalist as well, and it works out completely fine in the end. Our first novel today is Goodbye Things by Fumio Sasaki. As I said, this is the first book about minimalism that I read, and the first that allowed me to consider the possibility of becoming a minimalist. The book is essentially broken into a series of lists that help you A, pare down your things, B, continue with a minimalist lifestyle, and C, understand the potential benefits of this way of living. For me, the most eye-opening part of the book was the first part, where Sasaki lists 55 methods or ways of thinking about getting rid of things. Indeed, one of the points that I found to be most compelling about his discussion was when he talked about his book collection, and for him, what he realized was that the hundreds of books that he owned and tried to store in his tiny apartment were actually just part of his facade, and that they essentially manifested the kind of person, that is, the learned and intelligent and well-read person that he envisioned himself becoming in the future, but that he was sure was also incongruous with his identity and his goals for himself. To clarify the point further, let's look at the example of a book called Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace. Many, many bibliophiles are of the opinion that if you like books, you have to have a copy of Infinite Jest on your shelf, even if you don't intend to read it. To me, this says that infinite jest signals to a person their ideal self, i.e. the one that would read infinite jest, meaning that there's some hesitation to accept or project the self that the person currently is. Think about it. What if you were honest with yourself and got rid of all the books that you know you'll never get around to? Trust me, I've done this exercise before and have gotten rid of some fairly famous paperbacks, some fairly well-known classic fiction that I just wasn't interested in reading, like, for example, Aragon. And I realized in hindsight that keeping those books on my shelf for diversity's sake or to show that I had a range of tastes wasn't helping me in the long run, because every time I glanced at, say, Aragon, the book before, I felt the guilt of disinterest. Guilty that I wasn't the person or the reader that I was purporting myself to be. And I'll even let you in on a little secret. If and when you get rid of these things for your ideal self that your current self doesn't use, no one else will notice. Not your friends, not your coffee date, not your Instagram followers, not your family. The next book that we'll get into is called Everything That Remains by The Minimalists. So The Minimalists, Josh and Ryan, are two of my favorite influencers on this planet. I love their message, and I'm utterly convinced that they are doing good in this world. They are doing something that does matter, that does make a difference, and it's wonderful to take part in their community and their audience as they accomplish every project and goal. For example, before we get into the novel itself, they are building a grocery store in Ohio in one of the largest food deserts in the world, which is an important cause for me because the city that I'm in has similar stretches of poverty, and Chicago as well has similar stretches of food deserts and poverty in the South Side. Everything That Remains was actually an audiobook that I listened to constantly when I was living in New York City about a year ago. That was incredibly helpful to me because at the time it was a way for me to enjoy the life side of New York as opposed to the material things side. The book itself is incredibly touching. It's a personal story about Josh and Ryan's journey with minimalism and about how they went from being corporate bigwigs to the co-owners of this startup at a time when minimalism was virtually unheard of. Most of my definitions and philosophy about minimalism come from their blog and podcast, and I wouldn't truly be who I am today without their guidance and their rules for living. The next book that we will get into is called Simple Matters by Jenny Mustard. Simple Matters is a book essentially outlining the different aspects of what Jenny considers to be a healthy lifestyle, and a minimalist one at that. It goes through minimalism and veganism and ways to deal with relationships, traveling, you name it, and it's probably there. What I love about it in particular is how easy it is to skip around to the different chapters. It's definitely not a book that begs you to read it chronologically all at once. When I feel I need an update on one section or another, I find myself just going through to that section and reading it in its entirety. The book is also eminently readable compared to some of these others that are perhaps a little more dense, and it has these beautiful images throughout it that tie the text together in ways that are incredibly creative. I think that Jenny encapsulates her life in a really stunning portrait here, and this is the kind of book that I always have on my desk as a sort of coffee table type book because I find myself coming back to it time and time and time again. And then the last phenomenon that we will discuss today is actually Marie Kondo. If there's anyone in the minimalist enterprise that is one of the definitive members of modern minimalism, it's definitely Marie Kondo. She's written several books about the subject, which I won't enumerate here because of how often they are talked about in the minimalist scene, but she's especially famous for her folding method as well as the ways in which she personifies things, as in personifies material objects. While I haven't read her books, I have seen some of the famous Netflix show, and from what I gather, her brand of minimalism is not the same, certainly, as what many people immediately think of when they think of minimalists. And in fact, many of the minimalists that I've mentioned today are very different from the stereotype. Her definition is more about keeping the things that spark joy to you physically when you come into contact with them. We talked about this concept in a way when I brought up my example of Aragon. That book certainly didn't spark joy for me in my life when I encountered it. Where the concept breaks down, though, is with items that don't spark joy, but that you also need. For example, items like an iPhone charger or dental floss. I also think that this method has a tendency, as shown in the show, to lead to emotional overwhelm, as every single item is placed at the behest of immediate emotions, and the decision is made off of emotions alone. It's almost like Steve Jobs' famous look with the turtleneck and the jeans. He pared down the number of decisions he had to make every day by wearing the same thing, and the Kondo method does the exact opposite, and that increases the number of decisions or things that you have to have emotion for, especially when trying to pare down. And while the method is perhaps effective for some items, like memorabilia or nostalgic items, it just strikes me that there are more efficient ways to tackle physical clutter, especially. The way that Marie Kondo personifies items, on the other hand, is interesting to me because it gives them a weight and, well, life that I don't think that most of us really think about when we go about our day-to-day life. For example, she is a big proponent of thanking each item after it's been used, and also more commonly just before it's donated, as a way to show gratitude for the things that you have in your life. To give kind of a personal example, I was really intrigued by this concept a number of weeks ago when I first encountered it, so I started thanking my winter coat as I was hanging it up at the end of the day, verbally, to call attention to the fact that I wanted to express gratitude for it. For me and for many Americans, I'm sure, this experiment came off as extremely weird to me, and ultimately, I did decide to stop doing it, though I still think about those items with a touch of gratitude when I use them, which I think is a net positive at this point. Minimalism, as I've incorporated in my life, has allowed me the mobility that I needed to move across the country for school and provided me a peace of mind about going abroad this summer to study my craft in Canada and Berlin. It's allowed me to put things aside, like my digital image, in favor of things like meditation and religion and, yes, literature. It's opened doors for productivity for me as well, like you couldn't imagine. I mean, where do you think I get time to produce these episodes every week? Even if we've gotten this far in a review of minimalism and you are nonplussed, there's something to be said for the art of simplicity, and there are ways to incorporate a simpler lifestyle beyond going extreme and paring down most of your diet or most of your belongings. After all, as Da Vinci so aptly pointed out, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. If you enjoyed the discussion and would like to hear more from me, there is an episode of DH&I for everyone, so I'd recommend checking out our back catalog of episodes. 2019 is the year of Didion, so if you'd like to follow along in my quest to read Joan Didion's collective works or learn more about the movement to bring lit back to people, everything can be found at didionandhawthorne.blueberry.net, and remember that blueberry is spelled B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. Now you can also follow the show on Twitter with @DidionIn, 2 N's total. I'll be posting about new lit releases, reading lists, and of course the new projects and episodes relating to DH&I. Still there? One more thing then. Remember that leaving a comment or review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or any other Guilty Pleasure podcast platform helps leverage the show so that other literature enthusiasts can find the community. In other words, it helps a ton. Auf Wiederhören!